Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to Kings of Non Sequitur. Any topic, any subject, anything goes. With your hosts, Jay and Dre. Welcome in. We are indeed in the off-season, which means Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast here with you, live on a Monday night, March the 27th, 2023. I'm Dre, he's Jay, and it's that time of year again, WrestleMania coming around this coming weekend, once again with the two-night spectacle, Saturday and Sunday, this time out at SoFi. Out in Los Angeles, the roads are leading to Hollywood. All roads indeed are leading out to LA, and we are very happy to once again have Jerry, the wrestling expert, come in and help us break down and preview WrestleMania. Jerry, how are you doing tonight?
Great. Thanks for having me again. Can't believe it's that time of year already.
Yeah, comes up real quick. You get the daylight savings and you're adjusting to that. And then a couple of weeks later, oh, look, it's WrestleMania time. You know, baseball season coming along at the exact same time. That comes along as a surprise as well. Like you look up and it's time for baseball, which, Jay, you will be doing double duty. You and I tomorrow night have our baseball preview. So they get to hear both of our lovely voices two nights in a row. But you're battling it. You're playing hurt for us tonight, so we'll take it easy on you.
I'm trying to – I got to sort of fight through tonight because I know I'm going to have to do a lot more talking tomorrow, but this show is more about you guys. You guys are the wrestling experts. I'm more of the drive-by, you know, I'm kind of the collateral damage here, you know, just having a lifelong friend who's always talking wrestling and knows a lot about wrestling and, you know, I was always the you told me, I believe, what was the term that you said? I should have the wrestling podcast for non-wrestling fans at one point.
Yeah, because you get a lot of these predictions right, sometimes more than I do. And you only watch like once or twice a year, not even at all.
Yeah, well, it's all you need. It's like, you know, it's really like watching a soap opera.
Yeah,
you can go
we say it
a
every
year without watching, and you're all, you know, you'd watch one night, or in my case... In my case tonight, I was following along on the socials, so trying to just get the, because I do not have, once football season ends, I do not have any live TV service anymore. I don't usually re-up that until the draft.
Yep, and that's at the end of the month, so.
Yeah,
we'll
be back
for that. Yep. Everything coming up all at once. Yeah. This weekend we'll be in Chicago for the baseball draft.
I was invited to a WrestleMania party. I was like, nope, sorry, I'm going to be at the greatest day in sports on Saturday.
Yeah.
So I'll be missing that, and you'll be there, and we'll have that. I'm sure we'll be talking about that as we start getting into baseball. But tonight's about wrestling, so.
Tonight is about wrestling, which – Jerry, the wrestling expert, we saw the angle to end the go-home Raw, where, of course, Cody Rhodes is going to beat Solo Sikoa in his build-up match. You can't have the top challenger lose going into WrestleMania, so that was no surprise. They had the Usos come out and get interrupted from interfering by their challengers, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Usually... Jerry, I feel like we always kind of look at the build and the card, and we have a lot of criticisms and a lot of things to say that are not so nice, that all the things that WWE is doing wrong, or in our opinion, leading up to. I know you're going to agree with this. Things seem a lot better lately. The creative seems a lot more interesting. The build for the main event is compelling. The go-home Raw tonight was very good. There was not a lot of filler, not a lot of things that make you go, ugh, that's what is going on there? There's a couple of things here and there, but in general, I think you agree with me that things have been looking much better creatively overall lately.
Oh yeah, business has picked up from when Vince had stepped down and kind of handed the reins over. It was, you know, we saw some people get re-signed. We saw some. I mean, if a year ago somebody would have told me that something I'm looking forward to is Dominic Mysterio match,
right.
and where the bloodline's gone, and if I would have never picked Sami Zayn getting on fire, and I'm so happy for him, so happy for
yep.
him. I remember when he made his debut against John Cena for the U.S. title. He blew his shoulder out. He literally blew his shoulder out, waving his hands in the air too hard, and he blew his shoulder out. So like the guy just had some bad luck, and things that never seemed to kind of go outside of a matches with Kevin Owens. But to see where all of a sudden he got mixed in with the bloodline, that is something I did not see coming. And some interesting, really good quality pay-per-views from December on that were really, really better than normal. The bloodline storyline is fantastic. Gunther with the Intercontinental title, I think most people still kind of call him Walter, is pretty amazing. And don't get me wrong, there's plenty of dogs in this hunt. There's plenty of dogs in these cards, too. Like, I just don't care to see Stratus and Lita in the ring anymore. That's just me. Maybe I'm the only one that thinks that way. But there is some good stuff, though. Really good stuff coming up here.
Yeah, definitely. The whole bloodline thing definitely blowing up was, I think that's some really good patient storytelling that takes a lot of foresight. It takes a lot of resisting the hot-shotting booking and saying, okay, let's put somebody else's champ because it's been over a year, it's been over 2 years, now it's going on 3 years. Really great to build up a guy in Roman Reigns who they wanted to push to the moon all those years, and we talked for all these years that we do these WrestleMania previews about why they keep putting him as the top babyface and everyone's booing him out of the building. And now they have him in a very good role where he's sort of the godfather of WWE, overlooking everything with his wise man, Paul Heyman, next to him. And now they kind of surprised me by building him up for this long and having him champ for all these years, which I actually always thought was leading towards, let's just keep him at the top as long as we can until we can finally get The Rock to clear his schedule and come in for a WrestleMania, which has not happened. So now they get this Cody Rhodes situation happen where he becomes the free agent and decides to leave the company that he founded, AEW, and come over last year. It sure looks like they're building him up to come in and be the man to knock off Roman Reigns. So is that legit? Is after building Reigns for 3 years as this unbeatable champion, to have Cody, you know, to have Stardust come in and take him down, Jerry, is that believable? Am I being too harsh?
Right now it is. What I always worry about, and this is where WWE falters, is now what? That's what happened with Daniel Bryan. He won the title, and then it's like, now what? And it just falls into the old WCW when Sting finally won the title, now what? And we ended up putting the mask on Ric Flair. It was terrible. So I do worry that they've got to have some things lined up, post-WrestleMania for Cody to keep going. And to be, I mean the crowd reaction from when he first came to his injury, and the fact that he went through that match with that torn pec was disgusting and amazing. And then to have the big comeback and to have the Royal Rumble the Royal Rumble match, have it where there was almost a match afterwards, like literally the final two guys, I thought they were in there 20 minutes with each other at the end, which is unheard of. And it was entertaining. Forgot it was a Royal Rumble match still.
Right. Yeah, and had to get him in there that long to sort of make it believable and to keep him as a babyface because they gave him number 30, right? He was 29 or 30 in the Royal Rumble. So it almost was like, man, obviously he's going to win. They're making him, you know, they're keeping him out there as the last guy. So they didn't want him going 40, 50 minutes, which I guess I understand. But if you have him in there too short where he's the last, you know, the last person to enter and then only is in there 10 minutes or so and winds up raising his hands at the end, it's like, he just got there, and he won. So they kind of had to stretch it out a little bit at the end to make it, you know, credible. So I understand that. But yeah, just to have him as the top guy all of a sudden, just thinking about what he went through to get released by WWE and build himself back up on the independents in Japan, in AEW, in Ring of Honor, you know, pretty much went everywhere, went to Impact even for a while. And I always remember he's got that theater degree. Every time I see him cut a promo, I remember, oh, yeah, he's the guy that's got the degree in theater, because he's so dramatic. He's so, I guess, eloquent. He's so he really does know how to cut a promo in a different way than all these other guys. So it's not a bad thing. But when he's not paired off, you know, to do promos with someone else who's also great on the mic, it looks really bad. It sticks out like a sore thumb. And this, you know, feud, he's paired off with Paul Heyman. And of course, that's great, because anyone is going to look great when they're going toe-to-toe with Paul Heyman. So that of course, has been awesome. But, yeah, it's still a little to me, like, I guess I get the build around him. He's the returning star in the storyline and all that. He's like the overwhelming betting favorite. I know that we don't talk a lot about betting pro wrestling because it's kind of ridiculous because it's scripted, but you can find odds. Bet Online has WrestleMania odds, and Cody Rhodes is like the big favorite to be the guy to end Roman Reigns' streak. He's like minus 550 right now, and I would have never, ever thought something like that.
Super excited. I mean, this match alone, I've built to like what they did with the bloodline, to where, I mean, even anytime Roman Reigns is coming to the ring, I catch myself holding my finger in the air. I mean, it's like, am I really this guy? Am I on this train now? It's entertaining. It's great. It's a beautiful buildup. Cody Rhodes coming back and knocking out of the park, even though he's got the worst entrance music that everyone likes, apparently. But I'm the winner. I don't care. I don't even care who wins, because I think either way, it's going to be this is strange for me. I've had many WrestleManias where if this person doesn't win, I don't know if I can watch. I think it's unwatchable for a while afterwards. This is one of those moments that if they had Cody lose and it was an entertaining and a really good addition to continue the story. But I also don't want to see what happened to his dad, which is had a big moment at Starrcade, if you recall, and lost and had to try to drag it out a whole nother year. And I think it lost its luster by the time you got to the finish line a second time.
Yeah, there's a few things in there that I wanted to circle back to. There's a lot of good stuff. Trying to remember it all. All right, the Dusty thing was the last thing you mentioned. For those of us who remember the early and mid-1980s, we're really going back there. But, yeah, Dusty Rhodes, actually 3-time former world champion, but all those reigns were like a month and a half before the heel got the title back and they started the chase all over again, because that was sort of Jim Crockett Promotions' thing, was to have the bad guy as the guy with the title pretty much all the time, and that's how they made their money, was going all around the country, having the good guy chasing the bad guy all the time. And it was very effective, especially when Ric Flair is your bad guy. But yeah, Dusty losing in 84 with that, the Joe Frazier match. Jason, they had Joe Frazier as the special guest, like enforcer referee for one of those Ric Flair Dusty Rhodes title matches for Starrcade 84. And they had Joe Frazier, like a controversial decision where he looks at Dusty Rhodes bleeding, and this is the 80s, so as you remember, everybody bled all the time, right? But they made it where Joe Frazier, being the boxing expert, looks at the cut in Dusty Rhodes' eye and says, oh, it's too severe, we have to stop the match. And Ric Flair like escapes with a victory, you know, barely escapes, he's getting his ass kicked, but because Dusty Rhodes is bleeding, they stop the match. And they stretched that title's chase all the way out to Starrcade 85, and Dusty Rhodes fights Ric Flair again, and they pulled this, what's actually so legendary, they call it the Dusty finish, that it was a complete swerve finish where Dusty does something to get disqualified, throwing Flair over the top rope, but the referee got knocked out. So the match continued. Another referee came out of the back. Dusty beat Ric Flair, wound up getting a pinfall on him and winning the title, and the whole arena going crazy. And they went home thinking we saw our hero finally catch the villain and beat him and win the championship. And then, like, the next week on the TV tapings, they say, actually, the original referee saw Dusty throw Ric over the top rope, and he called for a disqualification, but nobody noticed because it was so loud or something like that. So, actually, Ric Flair is still the champion after everyone went home thinking that Dusty was. It was such a crazy finish. So that's the links that they used to go through to make sure the bad guy was still, by hook or by crook, still the champion, just to keep that chase thing going. So that's how they used to do things back in the day.
Yeah, that definitely wouldn't work. The time is right. I mean, I don't know behind the scenes what's going on with Roman Reigns. I know he's had some bouts with cancer. I have heard nothing that indicates it's back. And maybe it's just time for a break. I mean, he has been, hats off to him. He has been hitting the road solid for going on 3 years.
Sure. It is a little different, though. It's not like he has to go and work all the house shows. He doesn't work nearly as much as, like, if he was champ 10 years ago, 20 years ago, where they really were on the road 300 days a year. It's not quite that hectic, but he has been working hard. But they don't have to wrestle nearly as much as they used to. So I think that's a good thing, though. You don't want to burn these guys out if you can help it.
Well, I can't believe what I'm hearing. This has got to be the second biggest turnaround on this show since
Kumbaya,
your turnaround.
My Lord.
Since your turnaround on Josh Allen, I don't think we've had a bigger turnaround on this show than listening to you two guys talk about Roman Reigns positively. For how much grief he's been given, even on this show, over the years, I'm stunned.
I know. I'm stunned.
They just had to listen to us. If they would have listened to us 2 years ago.
Yeah, go back, folks. It's all there in the archives. The way that we've destroyed the way that they did the creative on Roman Reigns.
Yeah, and his awful handling of the mic, and.
Yeah.
You know, his lack of moves, Jerry talking about his illegal punch. I remember it all.
Wow, you really do remember it all.
He can illegal punch all day now.
Yeah, everybody. So that's the general consensus out there now, is like the people are, it took them, I mean, after having him like rammed down our throats for years, I guess it worked.
Well, that's the thing. How many years do you have to send him out there as your hero babyface and everyone boo him out of the building before you realize, hey, maybe we should turn this around and have him be the bad guy and give him somebody to speak for him, which Paul Heyman is the best to speak for somebody.
Well, now they're set up, though. Cody wins. He can take a break. And then when he comes back, he'll be on fire. Everyone's ready to love the guy then. And then we can see a SummerSlam rematch.
Yeah, it's all set up. One other thing you had mentioned that I wanted to reference, you say Cody has the worst theme music that people seem to love. Look, as long as Chris Jericho is still using that Judas shit, Cody does not have the worst theme music out there. That's just how I feel about it.
At least Jericho found out, hey, you know, I can make royalties every time I make an entrance.
Hey, it's his song, and he can make money off it. So, yeah, hats off to him. It's still a bad song.
Yeah. You know, and there's one thing I want to mention because there's no match announced yet, but he's going to have a presence. I never saw this one coming, but L.A. Knight is on fire, and it's a travesty. He's going to have some type of something on the show. I don't know what yet, but to see this guy go from – I didn't remember what his name was in NXT, and they switched it to L.A. Knight. And to see him take off, you know, and he's actually kind of in that phase where he's losing a lot right now. But the guy's got something, and I cannot wait to see where this is going to go over the course of a year or two, and hopefully he stays healthy.
That reminds me of the whole Vince McMahon situation where he has to step down last summer after all the Wall Street Journal reports of all the hush money that he's been paying, the millions of dollars of hush money to all these women that he's been.
Now, wait a minute. You know, it's the millions and millions
and
of dollars.
Millions. Sorry. I should have known that was coming. of all these women that he's been harassing over the years, so he finally decides to tweet out a retirement very hastily.
Is that what we're calling it now? Are we calling it harassment now, is what he was doing to them?
Abuse, harassment, there's a lot of names that it can be called. But the whole point is the creative turning around once Triple H took over and got the book, which we've been knowing that he was going to do for, you know, forever. The whole Eli Drake LA Knight thing, that is the type of thing, that's the exact type of thing, I don't know if you agree, Jerry, that would be buried if Vince was still head of creative, because LA Knight's not supposed to be over. That's the type of thing. It reminds me of Damian Sandow. It reminds me of, God, there's so many other guys that got themselves upheld. Daniel Bryan got over when he wasn't supposed to and got made to look like a goof for a long time. But basically anybody who gets over that doesn't have the machine behind them, they're going to find a way to slap him back in his place and take that push away. Fandango got over for a while when he made his debut and everybody was doing the dance in the crowd. And eventually they shut that down. And LA Knight getting over is exactly the same type of thing that I think they would put him eventually in like a turkey outfit for Thanksgiving and have him get embarrassed or throw a pie in his face or do something to make him look like a complete goofball and then wind up, you know, cutting him later by and claiming that he can't get over. But that's
well, you
not
know,
what's
you know
happening.
It's over when they, you know it's over when they put him in a wheelchair and throw him off the stage, Matt Cardona style.
Yeah, exactly. So that's exactly the type of thing that is why we're giving all this praise to not just Roman Reigns, but WWE in general, Jay, is they're doing things differently now. I mean, it's not a complete 180, but it's pretty damn close where guys who get a crowd pop, and by the way, I still strenuously object to the artificial crowd noise thing because it's hard to tell who is getting crowd noise and who's actually making an impact. When they come to the ring or when they do anything in the ring, it's still hard to tell what's real, what's not, as far as the crowd reactions on television. But the LA Knight reaction is hard to ignore. Like he really is getting a pop when he comes out because people do think he's entertaining. But that's the type of thing that gets you buried back in the day. And now I don't think he's going to get buried. I don't know if he's going to get a mega push, but I don't think he's going to be made to pay for getting over just because he's not supposed to.
I mean, it's reminiscent of what's going on now reminds me of what NXT used to be. And NXT was exciting. We'd watch it every week. My wife, of all people, even went. She wanted to go to the show in Green Bay, and we watched it live. It was fantastic. And, of course, you had, like, you had Bayley, and you had Sasha Banks when we were watching it originally and whatnot. And it was amazing to see. And the stories were good. The action was great. And the stories, I feel, have gotten better. They're starting to stretch these out a little bit more. Long title reigns. I mean, the last one we saw was, what, CM Punk?
Yeah, pretty much.
One was starting to get a stretch.
Well, it could have gone longer. They cut that off because they had Rock Cena Part 2. And that's they had to have Rock come in and bury CM Punk and set up that title match for that WrestleMania. They could have kept going.
Going back then, that's Vince McMahon too for you. Is let's have him lose. Let's have CM Punk lose to John Cena. Let's have him lose to The Rock. And then we're going to take him out. You know, then we'll have him in The Undertaker and every, you know, the well, you just took all the excitement out. You just have him lose to those two guys. Now he lost to The Undertaker. Where now, I just don't feel we're going to make those decisions. I just don't feel like those decisions are being made. Now, the joke's on us. We find out here Vince is making decisions. Ha-ha, you guys are marks. But you can definitely – something – I mean, you know what? If Vince is in charge and he's changed his mind, he's not booking the way he used to, then hats off. But what's going on now, I mean, is this strange that we're going through this podcast? We still haven't, like, I mean, yeah, there's going to be some things I'm questioning, but, like, overall, this is a huge turnaround.
Yeah, it really is. I'm not going to give Vince McMahon credit for it. The idea of a 75-year-old man finally seeing the error of his ways and deciding to do things differently. No, that's not reality. That's a movie. It sounds good, but that's not actually believable as far as I'm concerned. And no, I think it's just as what I said, that Ben stepped down, Hunter took the book and started doing what he wanted to do. And you compared it to old NXT from 4, 5, 6 years ago. And of course the common thread, Triple H was running NXT and doing things the way that we thought he would do it when he got a chance to run WWE. And that's exactly what's happening. I don't think it's any difficult. You know, you can connect the dots. I think it's really easy to see how things are going.
And I definitely want to go back to the Dominic and Ray. Very predictable. That's not the point. The fact that Dominic has come into his own, and even a little bit of the comedy of how, you know, all of a sudden he's this prison-hardened guy where he really basically went in the county lockup for a night over what, like a disturbing the peace situation. But he comes out with like a teardrop on his eye. He acts like it was like, this guy's got a great heel in him. And, you know, to see the inevitable finally happen where Ray's going to take him on, I was cheering for it. And I was like, predictability, that's what wrestling is, but you still want to see it. And it was drawn out, and finally they got the match. And you know, I would really, you know, like to see, and I don't think Dominic losing would hurt him at all, because he's just this – he is the Judgment Day, him and Ray Ripley. If you take those two out, there's really not much left and of what's going on storyline in there. But it is amazing. It's a little reminiscent of Eddie Guerrero in China.
Yeah, good call. And you got the mommy and the little guy, and you can't take your eyes off because it's such a sort of mind fuck when you look at them. Like those two don't really go together, but it's actually entertaining. Yeah, I'm impressed by Dominic's comedic timing as well. You know, his in ring is, you know, needs work, but that's fine. He's still young. I haven't been overly impressed with him at all, but I do have some expectation that match is going to be something special with his dad, because I feel like Ray wouldn't go ahead with the angle and with the match and the feud if he didn't think Dom was ready, if he didn't think he could get it done. And same thing with the, you know, the powers that be, Vincent or Triple H, whoever's green lighting all of this. If they didn't think Dom could do it, they wouldn't go this far with it. So I think he's ready to take that step. I'm sure Ray's going to put him over. I agree, it wouldn't hurt him if he lost, because he's still got the whole Judgment Day thing going, but I'm sure he's going to go over. But I actually think that match is probably going to be better than I'm giving it credit for.
Yeah, it's going to come across more like a grudge match anyway, so they don't have to, you know, Ray's going to be Ray, but it can turn into an ass-whooping, father taking the kid to the woodshed situation. So it doesn't have to be too sexy of a technical match. But Ray's going to do his part for sure, as long as Dominic can sell. And that's what the crowd wants anyways, is for him to get his. He'll be fine.
You're following along on socials, Jay. Did anything jump out at you that might be interesting?
I think the biggest takeaway is the pointlessness of weigh-ins.
Oh my God, that segment was awful.
And fully clothed, by the way, with shoes on.
Right. And one of them never weighed in.
Yeah. So I guess it was Brock that they never fight. They actually never got his, but that segment got thoroughly roasted on the socials, and that gave me some laughs. WWE is good for, you know, not everything is going to be a home run. There's going to be some dud segments, but first of all, wrestling weigh-in is pretty stupid in its own right. And then these guys apparently were out there fully clothed.
Mm-hmm.
And that the segment itself was just bad. There were a couple of the underwhelmed tweets out there on Twitter. Like, it sounded like a carbon copy of this show for the last however many years we've been doing this version of this show, where we start off and excuse me, and everybody's like, well, same old, but there was only a couple of those. Universally, it was positive, which I'm not used to seeing going into, you know, after the go home Raw.
Right. It, mostly and overall, pretty damn good.
Mostly positive, yeah.
And you just
when I'm going to sit here and say Brock Lesnar and Omos, I could care less about. They really, I thought they were going to put Gunther and Brock Lesnar. That really would have taken this to another level. But instead, they, I don't know. That's a match where the fact that Brock Lesnar is on a card that I don't care. That's the match I don't care about. I would have never called that a year ago.
Right. But from what I read, Brock Lesnar, they originally were going to do something with Bray Wyatt. And Brock said no. He just said, no, nah, I'm not getting into that silliness and that garbage. And they basically said, okay, fine. Here's Omos. You don't want to work with Bray Wyatt. Here's Omos. Work with that.
Don't know what's happened with Bray Wyatt because his match, it's not even on the radar, I don't think. And so I don't know if he's done now or if he got injured or there's some personal issues again. I don't know what's going on. But that the match that was impressive was that with that Mountain Dew black light match, which I thought was going to be lame, ended up being really cool visually. And LA Knight, I thought, really, you know, really stepped it up. It was great. But it is always kind of weird where Bray Wyatt's kind of got the Undertaker-ish stuff going on. It is weird, but it was entertaining. It was entertaining.
Yeah, but Bray Wyatt, you can only take so much. Like it's almost like black magic type stuff and voodoo. And it was bad enough when Undertaker is doing it, but out of Bray Wyatt, it just feels like, okay, dude, really? Enough. I don't know what happened either. He was supposed to work Bobby Lashley. That obviously is not going to happen because now Lashley is doing the Battle Royal that they're having on SmackDown Friday night. So, yeah, whatever was going to happen with Brock, Brock said hell no. Then they were going to move him to Lashley, and apparently that's not happening either. So, yeah, I don't know. It's Bray Wyatt. That's all you can say. You just throw your shoulders up and go, it's Bray Wyatt. It could be anything with him. So as far as the rest of the card, I get this sort of we're going back to Jim Crockett Promotions again when I talk about this. But with the whole Bloodline thing, you got the Usos with the tag titles and Roman Reigns with the Universal title going in, and both titles feel like they're in real jeopardy and real peril, and they've both been built up as champions for so long. They're pushing the Usos as the longest reigning tag champions of all time. I've had to look that up and double check that, but they got them against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. I'm getting a Four Horsemen vibe from that, where the champs got the belts, they go in to the big show, to the big pay-per-view, and it seems like there's some real drama there. There's actual a chance that they're going to lose those belts, that there's a chance that Roman's going to lose his belt, and like everything feels like it could just collapse it, you know, in one night, all at the same time. And back when Ric Flair had his pay-per-view title matches, he had with his comrades, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, they'd be defending the tag titles. And there were a couple of shows where Anderson and Blanchard lost the tag titles, you know, in the undercard. And it makes you think, oh, maybe it's all going down tonight. Maybe Flair's going to lose in the main event. Maybe the Horsemen go all the way down. Maybe this is the night everything falls for good. Maybe I've watched wrestling too long to feel that. But I don't know. It feels like something big could be happening as far as taking the titles away from those guys and making WrestleMania a really, really huge deal and a big show. Or it could all be a swerve and Kevin Owens could turn on Sami Zayn and have that feud start all over again. I don't know.
That's a tough one because we've seen, I mean, it's like trying to watch another John Cena, Randy Orton match. I'm done. those two have been at it for decades. And I don't know where that one's going to, I don't know where that match is going to go because that's another match. I would think I'd be happy either way.
Yeah. But I just say that because after all these months of Sami Zayn's going with the Bloodline and he's feeling oozy and Owens was trying to warn him all this time and Sami Zayn blew him off, and then it turned out Sami Zayn wanted to protect Kevin Owens and you know, felt bad for his friend. And Kevin, you know, stretched it out to like he wasn't going to forgive him. And this was just going to keep going on and on, where Sammy was trying to recruit Kevin Owens and say, hey, you can't beat him alone. You need my help and I need your help. And maybe at WrestleMania, the big reunion was going to happen, but they decided to do the big reunion last Friday on SmackDown, which I have to admit shocked me, because I thought they were going to stretch that out to WrestleMania. So doesn't that kind of make it seem like, well, maybe Kevin's just setting him up and getting his trust so that he can go in there at the tag match and the tag title match and turn back on Sammy and say, hey, man, I was trying to warn you, but you didn't listen. So now I'm going to show you, you know, I'm going to beat some sense into you or something like that. Again, maybe I've been watching too long, but the forgiveness from Kevin Owens just kind of came out of nowhere. It's like, huh, really? Okay.
That would be a Kevin Owens move. I mean, it'd be almost disappointing if he didn't do it, because that's what he's known for. If, you know, and actually do it where Sami Zayn is about to pick up the victory to have
right.
Kevin Owens turn on him then. You know, that would be pretty impressive. That would be pretty impressive.
Again, with the long range sort of booking and you know, again, I agree with you. The another Kevin Owens Sami Zayn feud wouldn't exactly be overly exciting, but with the sort of emotion of how big Sami Zayn got over in the past year and how big the reunion was, the arena popped big for when they finally hugged. It would be a, you know, a heartbreaking turn, and it would really get the emotions out of the fans if he did turn on him. And so the feud would have some juice. It would be a different sort of look at that feud again, if it did happen. Other matches on the card, low-key, really interesting match to me. They don't have too many of these 50-year-old guys coming out of the woodwork, but they do have ones that they have Edge coming back against Finn Balor in Hell in a Cell. And I think it's interesting having Edge call out the Demon. I think that puts a swerve into it that I wasn't expecting. I didn't think about Finn Balor doing the Demon thing because he's a heel right now. And the Demon is usually something he's been pulling out when he was a baby face and giving that extra oomph to the big matches for the big interest and all that stuff. But now Edge calling out the Demon version of Balor, who, and I believe the Demon version is still undefeated, correct? That sounds right. So I was thinking this was going to be Hell in a Cell, Edge going over Finn Balor and sort of one of his last big matches and big things to do before he finally hangs it up for good. But now calling out the Demon, that could really shoot Finn Balor pretty high after WrestleMania if he comes out as a Demon and has a great Hell in a Cell match with Edge and puts Edge down once and for all and maybe retires him. They could maybe, you know, set him up as the guy that ended Edge permanently for good. And that could be a big deal. So I'm actually looking forward to that more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah, with Edge, I just don't see where they're going to go long-term with him. So it wouldn't make sense for him to win, but you just never know. I know there's another one I never thought I'd be excited about, but the Royal Rumble got me excited with Seth Rollins and Logan Paul. Watching them both on opposite ends of the ring, top rope, leap at each other for a clothesline, and Logan Paul pull that off flawlessly. I'm like, could you imagine the high spots they are getting ready to do? I'm pretty excited about that match too now.
Yeah. Yeah, much as I want to slam those the celebrity matches, what they've been doing is they've been picking guys who really want to go hard in these celeb matches and want to do well. I think about that match that Bad Bunny had. He was excellent. Logan Paul's been really good. In the matches that they gave him a title shot against Roman Reigns in Saudi Arabia. He's going to look like a superstar against Seth Rollins because Seth is going to make sure of it. And Logan wants to do well as well. He wants to go hard and he wants to look the part. He wants to be the superstar. And he's got the athleticism to pull off those high spots. He's been much better than I would have thought. But yeah, it's kudos to WWE for, they still had the Johnny Knoxville thing a couple of years ago, which But for the most part, with these celebrities, they've been going with guys who actually want to get in there and work hard and get it done. So definitely kudos to Logan Paul for everything that he's been doing.
Well, Sami Zayn deserves a win now because the thought of him being forced to take a mouse trap pinfall that actually wasn't – it was botched on top of that. He deserves – this last year in general, I mean, I don't know if you saw the Survivor Series main event that was the old school gosh, what's the name of that kind of match they do with the two rings and the cage over the whole thing?
Oh, yeah, they did the War Games, yep.
They were War Games. Sami Zayn stole that damn show. And
yeah.
The storyline at the end with him was fantastic. And he carried the year to where, win or lose, I just want him to come out of WrestleMania to another level, whatever that's going to involve.
I agree. He's put in some great work, and they've done a great job of using his ability to get things over, not just in the ring, but like with the emotion and with the facial expressions and all the promos and all the work with Paul Heyman. They had to fill up a whole half hour to open one of those Monday Night Raws because I forget what happened, that whatever they were originally planning didn't work out or didn't go well. So they had that fake trial in the ring when Paul Heyman was first accusing Sami Zayn of not being on the up and up. And that could have really gone, to hell and bored everybody. But they carried it for 20, 25, 30 minutes of a fake trial to fill up some time. And that was, I think, a really big example of how valuable Sami Zayn and Paul have been over this past year. Like, they've had the chance to really do some things that, again, I think they wouldn't have had a chance under Vince McMahon to do things quite the way that they've been doing them.
I agree. They had the. It also gave a chance to give a quick synopsis for people that aren't watching regularly of what's going on with that story.
Yeah. It's been.
I know we haven't talked about the women's matches. I know both of them have the potential to steal the show again.
I agree. Bianca Belair is sort of in that imperial phase where she's going over everyone. She's the skyrocket is strapped to her, and she's going as high as she can possibly go. She's a celebrity. She's appearing on talk shows. She's basically about as positive a presence as WWE can present right now. She is almost the female John Cena, the way she's just been going everywhere and being pushed as the greatest thing since white milk. But Asuka knocking her off would not be a complete shock because Asuka is Asuka, and they should have a show stealer. I agree with that. The odds for that, let's see. I think that's really close. Yeah, Asuka is as slight a favorite as you can get. She's minus 130 and Bianca's minus 110, so that can kind of go either way. What I will say is Asuka is so strong to me, especially with his new incarnation. She's got a little more, a little different face paint, using the mist a little more, the blue mist. For Bianca to steamroll over her and win clean, I can see it, but I don't anticipate it. So this might be the spot for, again, I've been watching wrestling too long. Maybe this is a spot for Bianca to win and go over using some sort of tactic, maybe a slight heel turn for her to do something extra aggressive to have to climb the mountain and get over Asuka. Maybe before she gets stale, maybe they want to turn Bianca now and have her go over Asuka. I can see that, but I can also see them just putting Asuka over clean and sort of rewarding her for all the work that she's been doing.
Well, Bianca, if you go back to the other WrestleMania with Sasha Banks, she technically was dirty play where she used her hair as a whip. On she's done
Oof.
It before.
Well, I remember that. She left a mark, too. Oof.
Yeah. I was trying to figure that one out. I was like, I think there was a sound effect involved. But,
I don't think that was a
that
sound
was,
effect.
That was
actually her
pretty
hair.
Brutal.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. Or, you know, if Asuka beat her and then cut her hair, that'd be pretty, oof.
That would be vicious. I thought they were going to do something like that with Becky Lynch because there was a promo I remember where Bianca was referencing her hair and like, you're jealous of me, you're jealous of the hair, you're jealous because I have strength that you don't have or something like that. So I thought they were actually going to do that with Becky Lynch, but maybe Asuka will do it. Who knows?
Yeah, Bianca Belair, I mean, just her body type and everything. I don't think it's possible to blow her up in the ring. She has so impressed me over the last few years. And I did watch her a little bit in NXT. I'm so happy to see what she's achieved since she was in. I think she won the Royal Rumble. She already won a WrestleMania. This is another one for her. It was a little let down with the with how she lost the title real clean, real quick on Becky Lynch's return.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see her. I'm just so happy, and I didn't realize she had a condition called imposter syndrome. And I was reading about that, and it's a legitimate thing of not feeling you are worthy of. You almost can sabotage yourself, and how. Not feeling you're worthy of the things you've achieved. And that must be terrible when you're that good, especially.
Mm.
But I bet you it keeps you humble. You're humble at all times.
Right. It's definitely a thing because I have it. So I can definitely tell you that's a real thing. You know who else has it? Cody Rhodes' wife has it because I remember seeing an interview with her where she talked about she used to be a figure skater growing up. And she would get so upset when she would lose that she started sabotaging herself on purpose. Like she would, before big events, she would basically say, okay, how are you going to lose this time? Because you always lose. It's a thing where it gets in your head and you basically defeat yourself before you even get a chance. It's definitely a thing, but believe me, I'm well aware of it.
Mm. Well, I think it's been, especially with putting Bianca out there publicly, bringing that up really humanizes her and whatnot. And I think it's great that she's brave enough to talk about that, and being able to have been dealing with it head on her whole career. But it just kind of builds another layer of wanting to get behind her and to see her succeed. So we'll just see what they're going to do with it. But, yeah, and then I know John Cena and Austin Theory. I mean, Austin Theory needs to get a. It'd be nice to get a win over a legend. I don't know what they're going to do though.
I'm pretty sure they're going to put him over John Cena. It's a good spot for Cena to drop in and give the rub to Austin Theory. The veteran comes back and gives it to the young kid. Yeah, I don't imagine there's going to be anything other than Austin Theory goes over and keeps the title. And Theory's passed all the tests so far. I think he's going to be the next one to have the rocket ship sort of strapped to him and go as far as they can possibly push him. So it's good to see them because he was looking like a goof for a while too. And then Vince McMahon steps down and oh look, he's looking a lot stronger and he gets his first name back because they had taken the first name away. He was just Theory for a while, which is just stupid.
Yes. They did that to a lot of guys for a while there. Last year he had one of the best. Probably the top three Stone Cold Stunner cells I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I called that one the running man when he got hit with it. His legs were still going in the air.
I still love The Rock's one where he basically bounces all the way off the ropes and after he gets hit with the stunner and bounces back.
Scott Hall's at WrestleMania was still one of the, we had to do two of them. That was pretty fun.
Yeah. You mentioned the two women's matches. The other one, of course, Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley for the SmackDown title. And Rhea Ripley looks ready to take down Charlotte to reign as the SmackDown champ. She's becoming a major star on her own. And her airport run-ins show that she's becoming a major star. Have you seen those clips, Jerry, of Rhea Ripley's airport situations where she keeps keeps getting stopped by rabid adult fans trying to get her autograph? And it's like, guys, literally, she's trying to leave the airport and find her Uber and get the hell out of there. Let her go. Jeez. It's
another
scary.
Person I'm happy for, though. She has a unique look.
Yeah.
She came in looking like the classic blonde, just, you know, muscular. And, you know, she's changed up her look. I don't know how long she'll keep the gimmick of the goth. I could care less. I think she's fantastic. And that look is what got me to notice her. And that was the point. You know, and I'm going to throw out, this is going to be my long shot. But wouldn't it be interesting if Dominic screwed over Rhea in that match and ended up hooking up with Charlotte?
Wow, now there's a swerve.
That
would
be
a Russo-like swerve, bro. That would really be something. Rhea is the big favorite to win the SmackDown title. She's minus 1,000, and Charlotte is plus 500. So that would be a huge upset. Now, WWE pulls some huge upsets sometimes at WrestleMania just for this reason, just so it's not every major favorite just an easy bet. They eventually, every now and then, they'll throw in some sort of major surprise or major upset. So that might be on the board for that.
Well,
Sami Zayn and Kevin
is a rock star, so even if she lost,
yeah,
she's going to come out of there looking like a million. She don't need a title. She really don't need a title.
Right.
She's
$1 million.
She can take the loss. You know, and then part of me starts saying, do we want to start looking at intergender matches? I mean, in the China era, they didn't look good, and the thought of it over the, you know, but like looking at some of these ladies now, some of them, there's two calibers. There's some that still look like the Divas era.
Right.
And then you have some of these other ones where they're pulling up high caliber matches. And it is pretty amazing to watch. And I thought I heard is that the Charlotte Flair match is going to main event night one. I don't know if that's.
I don't know. I haven't seen that, but I don't anticipate intergender in WWE anytime. So I still think they're squeamish on that just because being a, you know, major corporation with sponsors and whatnot, they don't want to have guys, you know, punching women. They don't want anything that looks anything remotely like that. But I absolutely agree, Jerry. There's been plenty of excellent intergender matches on the indie scene. I've seen some of them. You can find them, some clips on YouTube and whatnot if you look. You know, Billy Starks and people like that having great matches with guys. It's not a major shock anymore to see a great woman versus man match. It happens all the time. WWE, I don't see that happening anytime soon, but there would be some bangers.
All four women are going to be in the championship matches are the caliber that could look good in going up against the majority of the guys.
I agree.
Themselves, and it is amazing to see how it's evolved.
Yep, I definitely agree with that. Jay, any other thoughts that we've been hitting on as we've going down the card?
Just this thought, I don't know if we talked about, I think it might have come up last year, but because I believe it happened at least once in the past where they're doing this two-night WrestleMania now.
Yep.
Do you like that?
I do. So back when I was, you know, in fourth and fifth grade, sixth grade, and fantasy booking and making my event, you remember that, Jay? I'm sitting there. I'm supposed to be working on class. We're all working on classwork, and I'm sitting there writing out these fantasy wrestling cards with you as a national champion and me as the continental champion and Parrish as the universal champion. I forget who's the world champion.
Or having
John.
Your social studies book, though, I believe, was the undisputed book wrestling champion.
Yes, the math book kept fighting and putting up a fight, but the social studies was just so heavy. It you couldn't overcome it. It was like King Kong Bunny. You just couldn't beat it. I have a long sickness with wrestling, Jerry, as you can imagine. When I was
totally
fantasy,
understand.
When I was fantasy booking, my big end of year show was two nights. I don't remember where I came up with that thought, but I've been doing that since 1987. This is not new. I was making that because I had so many guys. I was, you know, I was had WWF guys, I had NWA guys, I had world class guys. Everybody was in my league, and there was just so many guys. I just said, "Hell with it." My big interview show is going to be two nights. It's going to be, Atlanta on Saturday and maybe Charlotte on Sunday, or maybe the same building back to back. But I had my big show as two nights in a row because I thought that would make it sort of like a super festival type of weekend, almost a forerunner to some of these con fests and whatnot. I could have made a lot of money off of some of these ideas if I didn't have imposter syndrome, if I wasn't afraid of being thought of as an idiot. But I like the two night thing because it gives it that much bigger of a feel. You have to fill the two nights with quality. That's the big key. You can have two nights. The reason they started doing that is because they were having these bloated shows that were going 6-7 hours. When you talk about the pre-show and the pre-free show, and then the actual show started, it was so much garbage that they were filling up this time with. That they just say, hell with it. Let's just split it up into two nights and make it, 3 hours each night or 4 hours each night instead of this big, long, bloated show that everybody's falling asleep at the end of it. So you can make it two nights, no problem, with all the talent that they have. There's got to be quality two nights. It can't be, the Fiend, versus Alexa Bliss or something, whatever they did last year, the year before, that was everybody shit on. I think the Fiend beat Randy Orton because Alexa Bliss turned on him or spit black stuff at him. I don't even remember what it was. It was like, what is this garbage?
That match reminded me back when I was involved in the JCs and we used to do haunted houses. You'd always have make up all the rooms, and there'd be one room you'd say, oh my God, this room is going to be amazing. And it ended up being the turd room of the night. So when they talked up the Randy Orton and the Fiend match, I'm like, and then they're going to start the show with them. Ooh, they're going to do something huge. And that Jack in the Box comes out. I'm like, oh my God. And then it was over. Like, did something go wrong? Cause like, what the hell just happened? It was ridiculous. It was so reminiscent of the rooms in the haunted house that, all of a sudden, it's like you're polishing a turd. Like, no matter what you did, it just didn't work out. It was terrible. It's almost like Dusty's Halloween Havoc finish with Abdullah the Butcher in the electric chair. It's like, well, we're just going to have to get over that one.
I love that finish because it was so bad. It was so bad, it was good.
Oh, my God.
Abdullah the Butcher plopped into the electric chair, and Cactus Jack flips the switch because he thinks that
the switch accidentally flipped. So we had to flip it back up for the camera.
Didn't they do something? I vaguely remember them doing something during COVID because they couldn't have the fans, and they ended up doing almost like a cinematic movie match.
Yeah, Undertaker's last match wound up being like one of those matches with AJ Styles.
Yeah, like a movie, and that's the way that it was produced. But that's not wrestling.
No, that's
I call it COVID mania was terrible.
Yes, it was.
When the biggest fan was the large circulating fan in the in the training center.
That's the only
fan. Couldn't unsee it, and then the Bray Wyatt John Cena thing was just ridiculous. And it was like almost like a funhouse kind of a feel to it, and I was like, get me out of here. This is terrible. And it was really hard to watch that WrestleMania. I mean, I feel bad for the Brock Lesnar match and everything. Cause it was like, man, you got to carry this thing without like a real crowd. Those are some rough times.
Very,
the bingo
very
halls
rough
don't
time.
Seem bad all of a sudden.
Yeah. It reminded me of the last indie show that I went to in Chicago, which was in a warehouse, literally in front of like 30 people. Like you could see the mouse hole in the corner. That's how shitty this place was. It reminded me of having a card in there. But yeah, the two.
Oh, it sounds like the International Amphitheater.
I've heard so many stories about there. Oh, I wish I would have went there. I never got
to
see a card.
I saw a wrestling card there because I had a buddy who wrestled when I was in high school when I was working. Yeah. And
tell me about
it. It was WCCW.
Yeah, Windy City Pro.
Windy City Championship Wrestling. And I remember going to a card. One of them was in Dalton, which was...
Oh, my God.
That was a dump. Yeah. I mean, it was basically just a ring on a flat floor with no stands, pretty much. You just everybody just stood around and watched it. I mean, these guys give them credit. They busted their asses. They tried to put on a good show, and it was fun. But the venue was a joke. And yeah. But the International Amphitheater, where it was the ring set up in the middle, and it was you're walking on hay because they must have just had like a circus or something there or a horse, you know, something. So you're walking around the place, smells like shit, you know.
Yeah. Of course,
literally, and you're walking on hay, and you're in the down. Oh yeah, and it just had that farm smell. Like this was in Chicago.
I remember. Yeah, I remember promoting a show at a high school here in Wausau years ago, and I even had Honky Tonk in the main event. Honky Tonk Man in the main event, and we had good lighting. We had everything, sound, and 130 tickets spread out over a high school gym. Did not look very good. And it was like, damn, it's like $10 tickets, for God's sake.
Yeah, Wayne will go anywhere as long as you pay him. He doesn't care.
I found that out the hard way.
You probably got some stories that you can share and some you probably can never share about dealing with that guy. It's curious that even after the drama with Naomi and Sasha Banks over the women's tag title, they still aren't going to have the tag titles defended. They're going to have a six-man trios match, a six-woman match to get damage control against Becky Lynch and Trish Stratus and Lita. Yeah, I'm actually happy to see Lita and Trish Stratus back. I don't know how well Trish can work anymore. She was never that great to begin with. Lita can still go because she's Lita. Giving them the tag titles, Lita and Becky Lynch, that was a surprise, but it was a pleasant surprise. I was glad to see them sort of, you know, get the belts off of Damage Control just to sort of start the process of that breakup, because I'm sure that's coming in the next year. But yeah, they're just kind of getting them on the show, but they could have a tag title rematch. I thought that was sort of the natural way that was going to go, was to have Damage Control get a rematch and either get the titles back and start another year of that, or lose the rematch and start the breakup with them and Bayley. But maybe they'll start the breakup here with the trios match.
Now you might call me petty for saying this, but I still have never gotten over Lita cheating on Matt Hardy. Just never forgave her for it. Screw her.
Oh man, that's going back. That is really going back. I mean, you know, Edge was just as culpable, and he was the one that was married at the time, so it's even worse that he was involved with that. But yeah, that's you got to kind of let that one go. That's ancient history. I'm sure she still gets it. I'm sure people still bring it up to her, but that was a long time ago. That's 20 years ago, I believe. So they've all moved.
It sound like now I feel old.
Sorry. I know it was 20 years ago because it was.
But to me, it was yesterday. It's still real.
I know. It's, you beat me to it. I was going to do that. It's still real to me, damn it. I know it was 20 years ago. It was 2003 that Matt Hardy came into Ring of Honor, and I went out to that show in Chicago Heights to see him. And he did the job to Roderick Strong, which shows how old Roderick Strong is. But that was hot. Matt Hardy was absolutely on fire on the indies because of that whole situation. And, boy, when his music hit and he came out, I don't know if CM Punk got a louder pop in Ring of Honor than Matt Hardy did when he came out that night in Chicago Heights. So I definitely remember that whole situation. But, yeah, it's a while ago. It has been some time.
Now, just to touch base real quick on the Hall of Fame, they are definitely running to the bottom of the barrel.
Yes,
well,
they are.
Well, we got Rey Mysterio, and who else is alive that we can bring in?
Yeah, that's exactly it. My uncle was asking me about, I forget exactly who he was asking me about or why they were inducting, but I basically told him, look, they don't want to induct the dead guys. They don't want to put the attention on the dead guys that they haven't inducted, because we know why most of them died. You know, you're 30 years old and in great shape and you drop dead of a heart attack. We all know what that is. That's steroids. So they don't want to put the emphasis on that. So they're just trying to induct all the live people that they can find.
Well, they still put Andy Kaufman, so maybe he is still alive.
But he didn't die of steroids, so it's okay. He had cancer, so he's good.
Hall of Fame is so light, not even Benoit can save it. They're screwed.
Oh!
Too soon?
The man who shall not be named. Ouch.
Hey!
Yeah, my uncle texted me. He said, refresh my memory. Before Ray, has there ever been someone on the active weekly roster who was inducted into the WWE Hall?
Rick Flair.
I said, yeah. Right before the whole Shawn Michaels I Love You match. But my first response was, I don't think there's anyone before that, but they're doing it because they're running out of alive people. And that's basically what's happening is they can't induct a lot of the dead guys because it would bring too much stigma. And they can't induct Chyna because she was a porn star. So that's where we're at now.
Adult film actress.
Oh, sorry. sex worker. I have to be politically correct there. Have you been watching those A&E biographies, speaking of Chyna? Because they did one on her, and it was very depressing, which, of course, is
The Dark Side of the Ring got kind of hard to watch, where some of the guys who were getting interviewed, like Jim Ross and whatnot, are coming out saying, like, how things, just like anything, things can get twisted and tell the story how they want to tell it. I haven't watched the new season that's dropped. The Benoit one was really interesting, and it's hard to watch because his son is like a spitting image of him. That one was tough, but at the same time, it did show there was something going on with Benoit physically, or with his brain and whatnot. And it's sad. It's sad, especially when innocent children were killed over it. It was terrible.
Right.
But I don't think that was handled. The one on Moolah, I heard a lot of rumors about her, but I thought that was really well done to of course, you're interviewing people where you got to take it with a grain of salt. Like, some of these people might be bitter. Why didn't they come out with this stuff a long time ago? Especially waiting till they were going to name one of the battle royals after her, and then all of a sudden everything started. So I don't know. But I can't remember the one. There was a specific one that really upset a lot of the guys behind the scenes that were part of the show, when things got taken completely out of context. I'll remember next year's podcast.
Right. You might be talking about the plane ride from hell one, because that got Tommy Dreamer fired for a while. He got canceled from Impact for a couple of years because of his comments in that particular show. And he wasn't even on the plane ride from hell. He was just offering his opinion about it. It's a bad opinion when you say it's not sexual harassment when Ric Flair takes out his thing and twirls it around at the stewardess. Like, yeah, that is harassment, pal. If he did that to Beulah, you would say that's harassment. So come on.
Yeah, and that hurt Ric Flair for a while too. And of course, Ric Flair is a little bitter about it and whatnot. But it's like, dude, it was what it, I mean. You're laughing about it in a locker room setting, but that show is out there now, and And when they told the story, I can't remember if it was this one or another one where they did an animated version of what went down. It's like, damn, you're just putting it out
that
there.
Was it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the one. And not only laughing about it, but then in his own biographies, I watched the ESPN one, and there's a new WWE one on Flair where he goes back and forth between, I didn't do those things that they said that I did, and I was blackout drunk sometimes, so I don't remember what I did. Like, dude, one or the other, pick a lane. Either you remember and you didn't do it, or you don't remember. You can't have both. Sorry. But that's getting into the Ric Flair story, which is a really crazy story by itself. I can't believe he's still alive. Just speaking of Flair, you think about all the great wrestlers that have died over the years, and that guy, the way he abused himself and the things that he did, that he's still going. It's unbelievable. But that's Ric Flair for you.
He survived that big health scare from a few years ago, and he's actually inducting the Great Muta. And what I had heard was WWE told him basically to make sure he's going to tone it down, because he can get a little He can get a little wild. Depends on which Ric Flair shows up. Because the other thing is when you're inducting somebody, it's not about you. It's about them.
Think of who you're talking to, though. You're telling that guy to tone it down. That guy. Come on.
Well, to me, you're just goading him into doing the opposite.
Pretty much. You're giving him a live microphone. Jason is the same thing as at the NFL draft last year where they gave a live microphone to Ice Cube, and they got rewarded by Ice Cube being so loud he blew out the microphone levels. Like, this is what you get when you give a live microphone to these guys.
Yeah, I don't remember that one. Maybe I was that on a different broadcast or?
It may have been the one that I was watching. It may not have come up on the one that you were watching.
Okay.
Because we were watching different channels.
Right.
You know, last year, I will admit, was the first time I ever watched the NFL draft.
Oh.
And I remember I was at the lower level of the Elks Lodge, and I got coaxed into staying, and I'm like, I'll watch this damn thing. And I'll have to admit, it wasn't bad.
They try hard, don't they?
They
try to put a spectacle on.
It now. I mean, I remember getting up on a Saturday morning at starting at 9 o'clock, and that thing would go for, what, 7 rounds, and that thing wouldn't end until 10, 11 p.m.?
Yeah, it was 7, 8, 9 hours, something like that, straight through.
And that was before they condensed it down to 7 rounds.
Right.
I remember when that thing used to go 11, 12 rounds, and they do a good job on the NFL draft now. It is a production. They tightened it up. They don't telegraph the picks anymore, which they were getting a lot of grief for. We've talked about a lot on this show. It's one of our happier times, us being a football-focused podcast, that, you know, it's our one little island of football in the middle of the off season, and sort of like, you know, just kind of cleanses the palate for next year.
Because it's a TV show. It's you get the guys with their neon suits and things on the inside of their suits that sometimes are good for TV, and sometimes you're like, I don't know if you really want to show that, dude.
We get mileage off that stuff. We got our boy Red Stripe last year.
That's right, your guy.
You know, what I was impressed with was the production value of it was very reminiscent of borrowing from Vince McMahon, and it felt like it was this big thing, and the stories and everybody's opinion of who they're gonna take, and then the visuals that went along with it, and then the big moment. And I would, even though I'm not a Chicago Bear fan, I am actually interested to see what they're going to do now. I know they gave up the number one pick, I believe, and just to see where they're going to go with the organization, with what they traded away and what their plan is. And you know, Detroit is, you know, we could, you know, I'm always a Packer fan, but if we could see it where if all four teams were dangerous, that would be kind of exciting, actually, I have to admit.
That would also be brand new. I don't know if we've ever had
that
division where all four teams are actually decent. Ooh, that's been a long time.
I'm starting to step off the bandwagon for Green Bay a little bit because I'm like, ooh, I don't know how next year's going to go. We just mortgage. The team is kind of going to rebuild, I think, but – there are
Jordan
teams
Love.
I like. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Whew. We got a little football in our wrestling podcast there. So looking down the odds real quick again. I don't know if there's anything that jumped out that would be like, oh, maybe you want to look at that underdog there. But I think we both like Austin Theory to go over John Cena to open the show. Theory's minus 400. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are minus 4,000 to knock off the Usos. I think that's ridiculous. There's no way in hell you can get me to put 4,000 to win 100 on Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens winning that match. They could easily have the Usos go over and it wouldn't hurt Sami
like
Zayn and Kevin
bet.
Owens. Yeah, that's just no way in hell I would do that.
No, I would avoid that with it. I don't know anything about what you're talking about, but when it's that big of a number in a scripted event,
uh-huh.
That sounds like bet that underdog.
There's no favorite I would take in a non-scripted event minus 4,000. That's just stupid. Don't do that, please. Rhea Ripley is minus 1,000 to go over Charlotte.
You're going to be like that guy who bet the $1 million mid-game when the Vikings were losing 33-0.
And law, and would have won 100.
Yeah.
If they would have won.
Did we give that guy an award?
I think you did, yeah.
I know I gave him a weekly award, but I mean, we forgot him on Honors and Dishonors. That was a disservice if we forgot that guy.
I think you remember. I think you did hook him up. And something similar, because I was watching on Twitter when the Chargers were beating the hell out of the Jaguars in the wild card game, and the Jaguars came. But somebody put like $250,000 to win $50 or something ridiculous like that, and wound up losing. It's like that's what you get. You got that much money that you can throw away trying to win $100. You can throw away $500,000. You deserve to lose that because that's just dumb. So yeah, I would never do something like that. Let's see. I talked about Asuka and Bianca. They're basically even. The three-way Intercontinental Championship match, which we didn't really talk about, but there's not much to say. That's going to be a banger. That's going to be hard-hitting. It's going to be fun as hell to watch Gunther or Walter. I still call him Walter because there's no reason for him to change his name to Gunther. Walter was just fine. But Gunther, Sheamus, Drew McIntyre, having a three-way for the Intercontinental title. Gunther plus 100, Sheamus plus 120, and Drew McIntyre, shockingly, is actually the underdog there at plus 300. I don't know, but that's basically sort of even between those three. So how do you see a result coming from that? Or you just, that's another one, Jerry, you just say, I just want to watch and enjoy it no matter who comes out.
I want to see Gunther take Honky Tonk Man's reign, and that would build, that would actually make the Intercontinental Championship mean something again.
Right.
And watching him stand there with his build, with that title around his waist, you don't see a lot of guys wearing the title like that. And to see him take the record to where it would catapult him. Not many guys win that title and do anything with it anymore. To me, it would truly mean something if he beat the record. And now it's like, ooh, now some people are looking at the Intercontinental title like it means something again. I think there's too much at stake to maybe build that Intercontinental title how it's viewed. Triple H is very old school, and I have a feeling he has a little bit of a man crush on that Intercontinental title and what its history and what it meant to. And he's a good guy to have it around his waist, and usually your hardest working guy, and that's the way it was viewed back in the day. So I would like to see them go that route and see him beat that record. And then when he does lose it, it would mean a lot to whoever was getting handed off to. And then that would just catapult him to the next level. That's just my take.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. The only small quarrel I have with it is the longer that title stays on Gunther, the longer it would take to get him built up to a world title challenger, because I think him versus Roman Reigns would be great. I kind of would rather see him go over Roman than Cody Rhodes, but I understand Cody is the hot act and gets more reaction, so I get it. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Gunther as well.
And even to have it where by SummerSlam, I think by SummerSlam he'll beat the record. What if it's a title for title, and it's a champion versus the Intercontinental champion, and if Gunther even loses that, if Gunther wins that match, they can vacate the Intercontinental title, and he never really lost it. That's a great way to get it off of him. That's just an idea, but I think he'll have the record sometime this summer. So it's not that far away.
Yeah. It'd be fun to see. I don't think they'll do that, but it'll be fun to see. Becky, Lita, and Trish are slight favorites to win over Damage Control. They're minus 215. I actually think Damage Control will win that match and sort of get their heat back, even though they won't win the titles back. Dominic is, of course, the favorite over Rey, minus 140 to Rey plus 100. I think that's fair. I don't think they go through all of this just to have Dominic job to his father and go back to the sling back to Mommy. I think Dominic goes over. It's probably cheating. Mommy will probably interfere and help him, but I think Dominic goes over there. And then the Hell in a Cell, Finn Balor and Edge, that one is something that I think I was thinking Edge was going to sort of go over and have his big stand and his last hurrah, but now calling out the demon, like I said, I think that's a way to sort of put Finn Balor over and get him a boost going out of WrestleMania to possibly get back into top contention himself.
I agree. You know, when you got to throw Hell in a Cell in there to give it some sex appeal. Oof,
yeah.
To me, it's a big high spot potential. It would be a beautiful high spot for Finn, potentially. And I don't know. They're not real big on the Bloodfest anymore. So I don't know what their plans are for that match. But it is not a big opportunity for Finn to kind of, okay, you know, even the Judgment Day faction, how Edge, it just seemed like they changed course because how they quickly unseated Edge from it, it seemed awkward with how they did that. And
Right. He started it, and like 3 weeks later, he was already being ousted from it. So it was very odd. Seth Rollins is the favorite over Logan Paul, minus 500. Even that almost seems a little bit of a sucker bet because they can have Logan Paul sort of go over and win that match, and it wouldn't be a complete surprise. I think Seth probably is going to win, but I don't think it's a complete slam dunk there. But I'm with you.
I'm going to preface this by saying I get this is a work, but Seth needs a win. Like he needs like a big money match win. Like it'll start to I think affect him. You know, he's had some big matches and he's lost them all. I think it's time he's this weird tweener where is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Do you really care about him? I understand he dresses weird. Is that his gimmick now? And he could pull out, he could have a great match. I've never questioned that. To me, he was the workhorse of the Shield. So yeah. I never questioned him. I mean, his Randy Orton match at WrestleMania in San Francisco, that finish was gorgeous. It's still a WrestleMania moment, a modern-day WrestleMania moment being used, where he got catapulted in the air for the RKO. I just think it's time for him to throw a win his way. I mean, it's not going to hurt. Tell me how it's going to hurt Logan Paul, who shows up once or twice a year.
It won't, not at all. But I kind of think Seth is in that sort of spot where he can do anything and keep losing and still not be hurt too much. Because even if he lost to Logan Paul, he would come out the next night on Raw dressed in something goofy with some weird sunglasses and everybody would sing its song and he would do his cackle. And
now, are you talking about The Miz now?
Oh, sorry. No,
what I'm saying is it's very reminiscent of The Miz. And like, I don't know. It just, you know, that – I think The Miz, they threw him a bone. I think he's hosting WrestleMania, which, whatever. Do what you got to do, I guess. It's a payday.
I don't need to see Miz on my TV. I've been a very long-time opinion of that I have no use for The Miz, so he can be the host. That's fine. I don't care. And he works hard, and I understand that. I just don't really care for him. Brock Lesnar, the huge favorite over Omos. I think this is if you're going to bet $1,000 to win $100, you should never do that. But if you're going to, I think this is a good bet because they got Omos looking as strong as hell over Brock Lesnar last week and this week. Jay, you didn't see what actually happened for Brock Lesnar to not weigh in. But what happened was he charged the ring and tried to attack Omos, and Omos kind of shoved him off and threw him out of the ring and then picked up the scale while he was in the ring and almost chucked it at Brock Lesnar. This is a big-ass, you know, doctor's office scale, too, and he picked it up and looked like he was going to throw it on Brock Lesnar's head, and Brock is like almost running away outside the ring. You don't do that unless you're going to have Brock Lesnar go over at WrestleMania because you're making him look like a complete jackass if you have him lose.
I don't know how much longer Brock is going to be around. So if he wins and all of a sudden he's gone, now you've beat Omos over for what? And that's what I worry about is Is that Brock's contract up or he's got the itch to fight some more? I don't know what they're – I mean, if he's going to be around, great. I just don't – I don't like the Canadian cowboy gimmick. I don't know, whatever's going on
I don't
there.
Like it either. It's so weird.
I just miss him coming out as a badass, not this kooky good guy-ish thing he was doing. It's kind of weird.
It's very weird. That's what happens when you have a bad person trying to act like a good guy. Like, Brock was not a really good person, but he's trying to act like it, and it doesn't work.
Jay,
it doesn't work at all.
Jay, he literally, at a main event, brought out a tractor to lift the ring in the air. I'm just, that's all. I don't know what else to say.
He's Ford tough.
yeah.
Did they start playing Bob Seger?
Like a rock.
Yeah, my problem with Lesnar is they have all these modern wrestling video games, you know. They're perfectly suited to these PlayStation 5 controllers, and because you need all these different buttons for all these different moves. And Lesnar would need the old Atari 2600 control. Because it's just
shoulder
a joystick.
Tackle into the corner.
It's just a joystick and one button.
And one red button. Let's
one
go.
Red button. That's
German
the
suplex,
Lesnar's
F5,
moveset.
Shoulder block in the corner. That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's it. Oh, and then that's all he's ever needed. So, yeah, he's going to go over Omos. I don't understand the whole point of that. They got these four-way tag matches. Sort of get everybody on the card.
Are you putting money on that? Are you going to put money on that? Because then it will not happen. Oh, okay.
No, I am not betting. I have had a really bad streak of betting, and I am out.
I'm not putting drink tokens on it even. It's nothing.
And they even have they got it on the list here of Vince McMahon to appear during the show. They have a prop for that, but then they don't have odds. I don't know. I guess they're going to have odds or they had odds where they locked it. I don't know. Must be in person on TV. I don't know if they're going to go there. I know he probably wants to, cause he's been appearing backstage again. The rumor is that he's just back there trying to sort of facilitate things behind the scenes, that a sale of WWE is imminent. That's what the rumor has said. So, as we wrap up, Jerry, I guess I would ask, what do you think the near future is going to look like for WWE? Cause it looks like the change that's been happening over the last year is still sort of going on and trying to continue that same direction of Triple H sort of being in charge of everything and running things in his vision and his image. You see that continuing?
Well, if you get a buyer, it depends on what the terms are. Or are they going to go to get somebody that's going to take it private again? I don't know. I'm surprised, Triple H and Stephanie don't look at doing how Vince bought the company from his dad. He went, got investors, got things lined up and bought the company. It's worth quite a bit more than when he bought it. But if they don't do that, then you're at risk of just somebody like NBC or, I don't know, Netflix. I would not be surprised if a streaming service bought it for the product. Mm-hmm. Then the problem is, are you going to have everybody in place still? How's that going to look? I don't know. It just seems like a bad dream to me because we are hitting – my dream was like Vince needs to move on, and it's happened, and things are going so well that I worry where things could go if there was a buyer and all of a sudden the product changed to where it got very WCW-ish in the end. And you have a company that's not interested in you.
They get bought by the Saudis.
That's the rumor. That's the other possibility. Is they're already
know.
In
after
bed
that with... last was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago where they were on the plane and they were all worried for their lives there for a moment.
Yeah,
You got to be kidding me. The fact that these guys are going back there to go through that again, I don't know. Maybe that story's overblown and it's not what really happened. But when they're making you sweat it out on the airport and not letting you go. I just can't believe we're still doing shows there. If that's what's going down.
They came, they've been going back. They're still going back there for shows.
They're
so obviously
they're going for a King and Queen of the Ring are going back there this year.
Right. So you can do whatever you want and then scare everybody, but guess what? At the end of the day. That's all that matters. If you got the money, you can do and say whatever you want. So that's the way it goes, unfortunately. NXT Saturday at noon before WrestleMania. That's a weird spot to me. The two night thing is, like I said, I guess I was dreaming that up, when I was a kid. So that's not so strange to me. But then you have your minor league show the same day in the afternoon. That's a little odd to me. I guess you can't do it Friday night because of SmackDown. So you got to kind of find a way to fit it in at that point. So, any thoughts or anticipation on the NXT show?
Not, I haven't been following it since it went to 2.0, which I heard they've now gone back. I just haven't given it a chance since they went that route. And I'm sure the Hall of Fame is now a brunch on a on a Tuesday. I have no idea. Because, there for a while there it was. Right. One night was NXT, one night was WrestleMania, and then one night was the Hall of Fame, to where it was kind of like this thing. And now it's a two-night WrestleMania, and SmackDown's in the way. So it is kind of a unique thing going on because NXT is trying to, now all of a sudden it's a daytime matinee house show. But now that you say this, I might give it a shot, see what's going on. And I'm sure they do a really good job of showing you stories of what's get you caught up real quick on NXT and see what's going on and give it a chance again.
Yep, just like any WWE programming, as Jake has been telling you for 10 years. You just check in and catch up and you're right there. Watch one show and you're all caught up. The main event is going to be really good for NXT. The two kids they got, Rick Steiner's son is the champ, and his opponent is really, really good. His name is escaping me at the moment. Carmelo Hayes. So I don't know about the rest of the show. That match is going to be really, really good. The main event. But the rest of it,
I have been following Bron Breakker a little bit, and is it Bron Breakker? Is it?
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely will check it out then.
All right. So any final thoughts about the WrestleMania card? A lot more positive than normal this year.
SoFi Stadium looks like it could be an amazing venue. I was just watching on HBO the Weeknd's concert there, and that was an amazing concert. And what that stadium can bring is, I think that's the first WrestleMania being held there, and it's an interesting structure. And I think it would look good on camera, and it'll be, I haven't seen any leaks of the set yet, but they've really been going over the top with it year after year, with the exception of COVID mania.
That's when they broke everything back down. And Jay, because the Rams and Chargers play there at SoFi, this will be our first chance to see what the stadium actually looks like filled up.
Hey, hey!
That's true. You've been saving that one, haven't you?
Actually, that just came to me. It's late.
Oh.
So every now and then.
They'll probably do the attendance record for the building.
Guaranteed. Guaranteed they will. Even if it's not the real number, they'll claim it's an attendance record for sure. Jerry, it's been great fun once again previewing WrestleMania. I'm always grateful to have you come back every year and do this. We always have a good time. So thank you very much for joining us and looking forward to an actual entertaining WrestleMania. We hopefully won't have too many dead spots like we usually do.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. This was a lot of fun.
Well, thanks, Jerry.
All right. That is Jerry, the wrestling expert, once again, joining us and previewing WrestleMania 39, I believe this is.
Yes, 39.
39 WrestleManias. Boy, I still remember the first one, all the way back in 85, I believe. It's been a long time. Hulk Hogan is like the only guy still alive, I think, just about from those days. Well, his tag team partner was Mr. T, and Mr. T is still going too. So those two guys still kicking. So good for them. But yeah, definitely much more positive this year. Again, the creative direction.
I was stunned.
It's a totally different. As soon as Vince McMahon stepped down, Jay, it was crazy. All of a sudden, you see guys start getting pushed that you've been waiting on for so long. Like, you know they're good, but they hadn't been really getting the push. Jerry referenced some people that would be fired. For instance, Braun Strowman was fired, and some other people, Dakota Kai was fired, or one of the women. Some really good wrestlers that they just decide to fire. Like every April after WrestleMania, they have these rounds of firings, and they just decide, okay, you're gone. And most of them are really good wrestlers, but for whatever reason, Vince McMahon decides, I don't need them. We can let them go. So then Vince McMahon steps down. All of a sudden, these people start coming back, and it's like, oh, Braun Strowman's back, and then Dakota Kai's back, and here come all these people back.
Yeah, say what you will about, you know, Triple H, but he's from inside the system. So that makes sense, you know. I mean, you know, Vince tried to insert himself into the system, but, you know, Triple H worked his way up, and I think he appreciates that, the work part of it. That makes sense.
He's old school, like Jerry said. This is how they did it back when he was growing up. This is how they used to do it. You reward the hard workers. Even if they don't get over the greatest of the crowd, you still give them time. That's the difference. Is you look at, you know, he mentioned LA Knight, who's one of those guys who he's been around. He's older. He's got gray in his beard, so he's not a young guy, but he's starting to catch on. His act is starting to catch on because he's entertaining. And instead of just you're not catching on fast enough, we'll wish you well in your future endeavors and getting rid of him.
You're fired.
Some time. Yeah, right. You're fired. This is different now. You give the guy some time, give him some spotlight, and you see what happens. You let him run with it, and you know, give him the ball, let him run with it, and see what happens. And it's a whole different structure. You know, the people working there say it's different and better. Of course, they would say that if the old guy was a, you know, as much of a serial sexual assaulter as he's been rumored to be. What I really would love to know, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the women's locker room when Vince McMahon starts coming back to these shows, which he's been doing the last month or so. I'd love to know what they think, because there's got to be some of those in there, some of those women that have been the victim or attempted victim, and yet they still work there because that's WWE. That's the pinnacle. That's where you want to go. So there's stories that still haven't been told yet as far as that goes. I would love to know some of those stories. Because, you know, I see Trish Stratus coming back, and I see Lita coming back, and those two were, you know, from the 1990s and 2000s and shit. They know some stuff, and they may have been victims of some stuff. And Trish Stratus specifically was one of there's been a couple of women that got wrote in storyline-wise as Vince McMahon's lovers, right? And I remember Trish Stratus being one of his lovers and having to, like, kiss him and like tongue kiss him on the air, like it's part of the storyline. And I remember watching that as a, you know, 20-something year old going, are you fucking kidding me? I'm supposed to buy this? Like, this hot ass woman is sitting there tongue kissing this old, dirty old man. And no, this is, it's wrong and it's disgusting. And
right.
You knew from then that it was an abuse of power. You knew that there was something happening there where I'm sure she didn't want to do that, but felt like she sort of had to. And his wife is sitting right there, Linda McMahon, who's now who went on to be, you know, part of Donald Trump's cabinet. So there's a lot of shit going on back then, and their stories. I know their stories. They just they're not telling them publicly, but I'd love to know some of them. But yeah, it's still much more positive going on than negative. Although if the Saudis wind up buying them, then it will be a lot of negative stories once again.
Yeah, that's, you know, I was just throwing that out there.
Yeah, no, that's part of the rumors. That definitely was rumored.
Wow.
The Saudis might be, because you know they got the money. You know they got the money.
Oh, yeah, and I know they have the ties, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're already doing business a couple times a year. So yeah, it would not be a big leap. All right. I have to work tomorrow. I don't know if you have to work, but
I don't.
But I got
this damn thing, this chest, you know, and they checked, you know, it's not COVID, it's not any of that. I don't have a fever, but I haven't had a good night's sleep in probably a month and a half. So it kind of, you know, hit ahead here this last week, and I was like, oh, going to the doctor. And I went to the doctor, and of course, you know, they put me on some medicine and some lung or sinus thing, and trying to like work through this. Every day is a little better. I'm hoping to be 100% for the weekend, because it's sitting in a chair for 7 hours. It's not physically stressful, but that is the greatest day in sports can be very mentally draining. I know when we get done with it, we're tired.
Yeah, I was just thinking about last year that we finished the draft around 3 p.m, and we, you, me, and Loser went to Buffalo Wild Wings for a few hours, and then we got to our respective hotel rooms like 6 or 7 o'clock.
I was
going to
say, 6 o'clock, we were calling it a night. We're like, oh,
yeah,
we're done.
But we both went to sleep when we got back to our room.
You also had like a 4:30 in the morning flight or some crazy thing.
Yeah.
On that Sunday,
right.
Which thankfully you don't have as early of this time, and you're flying out of O'Hare instead of
That's
Midway,
right.
Which is a big positive. So, yeah,
yes.
We don't need to do much of an after show because we're doing this again tomorrow night.
We are right back in the saddle tomorrow night for our big baseball preview show. So looking forward to that. So yeah, we'll cut the after show off here. And like I said, I got to go to work.
Yeah.
And you got to save what little voice.
I mean,
you
I'm
going to
be
so.
Up at 6 o'clock or 6:30, no matter what, cause I've got kids and
sure.
Alarm clocks start going off. Even if it's my day off, that happened to me this morning. So I was just sleeping so good finally. And my wife's alarm clock went off at 6:30. So what do you do? She has to work. I had to work, but I didn't have to work until later in the day, and dealing with this eye thing. So I was at the eye doctor seeing some specialists today because I'm getting all the one of my eyes I'm seeing double. So, it turns out I've got some very common condition in the eye, and he was giving me all the, you know, I don't like touching my eyes, and they're talking about shooting lasers and shit. I'm like, no, let's why don't you cut my eye open with lasers?
So no LASIK for you?
That's not LASIK. It's to correct some imperfection that I apparently have in my eye.
Oh, okay.
So
either
not
way,
quite LASIK.
Either way, no
LASIK. It's basically just trying to like unfuck up my eye enough to where it's just bad vision.
Oh, okay.
So I get to go. So they fix that, and then I just have bad eyesight versus having bad eyesight with double vision.
Right. Well, we're both falling apart because I got
it's basically, it's just called getting old.
Yeah. Yeah, I still got the nerve thing that I was telling you about last show. The little and ring finger on my left hand, I haven't been feeling it for a month now. So.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. And I'm giving myself my best crash course on baseball this year, so. One nice thing about a long work commute is hitting the podcasts, like all the fantasy podcasts, pretty hard. So, and just reading up on the news and trying to get myself up on the rosters. You know, I had given up on my team last season and then somehow backdoored into money, which I wasn't expecting.
Isn't that how it always happens?
Isn't that crazy? And so I wasn't really into much of that was happening with these guys that got called up late. So I'm almost re-educating myself to a lot of this stuff, but I'll be ready.
My picks, when you hear them, you might say that I should have been listening to more podcasts or something. Maybe.
Oh.
they're probably going
to
be a little goofy.
I'm sure we'll get at that as, tomorrow's the big, was that 2-hour baseball preview?
Yeah, well, we're gonna fill up the time, and
doesn't matter how long the show is.
Right.
We're gonna talk about the last division in 4 minutes.
In the last 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yep. So it doesn't matter. All right, so we'll cut it now so that we can save ourselves a little bit and get ready for tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, back-to-back podcasts. Your boys are in the saddle for two nights in a row. Tomorrow is our big baseball preview, and hopefully we will entertain you as much as we did tonight with our wrestling preview, if we entertained you at all. All right. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast, our big WrestleMania 39 preview, much more positive than usual, and hopefully everyone will be entertained by that show, which I will not be able to watch Saturday night because I'll be asleep after our baseball draft. Our baseball preview show tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. Hopefully we will talk to you then.